Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Charles Gaddy, a senior fellow at the Foreign Policy Institute at Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies, a former senior advisor with the policy planning staff of the United States Department of State, and a former professor at Union College and Columbia University. His books include Failed Illusions, Moscow, Washington, Budapest, and the 1956 Hungarian Revolt, and Zbigniew, the Strategy and Statecraft of Zbigniew Brzezinski. He has an article at the Washington Post, What Viktor Orban's Victory Means for Hungary and the West. Welcome to Background Briefing, Charles Gaddy.
Thank you.
And the triumphant Prime Minister Orban, who won the Hungarian elections, is somewhat triumphal and rather scornful of his Western critics. What is, do you think, is his real feelings? Is that bravado, or does he not mind being isolated in Europe?
Well, what he subjectively believes is very hard to tell, but he has been able to rely on a very large number of Hungarian voters and supporters who have come to believe that the West is in decline and that the West is engaged in all sorts of conspiracies against Hungarians going back probably centuries, but certainly to after World War I, when Hungary lost two-thirds of its territory and population when the Austro-Hungarian Empire fell apart. So there's a lot of bitterness, and Orban has been able to spark a good deal of hostility towards the West.
So when he campaigned using this notion of the EU's colonial mentality, that resonated, although it does strike some as being pretty hard to fathom in terms of the EU is hardly a colonial operation. It's more of a cooperative operation, isn't it?
Well, what he has campaigned against is the European Union, which is, of course, an important part of the West in that part of the world, and Western banks that, according to his evaluation, have taken money out of Hungary and got rich, and so he has taxed them far more than before. The colonial mentality has to do with some Western leaders giving him advice, mainly behind the scenes, about how far he can go without future consequences, and he resents that. He's very proud. And he believes that his country ought to be sovereign, and therefore the West should not be lecturing him. In this respect, there's a lot of similarity with Vladimir Putin of Russia.
Well, he seems to be befriending Vladimir Putin, is he not? I mean,
this is one of the extraordinary changes in his politics, because I used to know him back in 1989, 1990, 91, even maybe 1992, he was strongly and not only anti-Soviet and anti-communist, but anti-Russian as well. But then gradually over several years, this has changed. And this time, in the past 4 years, he has moved very close to the Russians, something I do not mention in the article, space issues. Is that he has signed a major agreement with Putin having to do with the renovation and renewal of Hungary's large nuclear energy facilities in Paks, in southern Hungary. And this has committed Hungary in what was a secret agreement, by the way, for over three decades, to Russian goodwill. And but in addition to that, a smaller and more understandable sign of his attitude is that he has not joined other Europeans in advocating sanctions against Russia after the invasion of Crimea and Ukraine.
Again, I'm speaking with Charles Gaddy, a senior fellow at the Foreign Policy Institute at Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies and a former senior advisor with the policy planning staff of the United States Department of State and a former professor at Union College and Columbia University. His books include Failed Illusions, Moscow, Washington, Budapest, and the 1956 Hungarian Revolt, and Zbigniew, the strategy and statecraft of Zbigniew Brzezinski. He has an article at the Washington Post, What Viktor Orban's Victory Means for Hungary and the West. Of course, it's no small irony that it's called the Budapest Agreement of 1994 that Russia, the UK, the US, Crimea, Belarus, Kazakhstan signed to remove nuclear weapons from Ukraine in exchange for guarantees of integrity in terms of their territorial control of Ukraine, and that has been flagrantly violated by Putin. But in the case of the Hungarian Prime Minister, the fact that it was called the Budapest Agreement, I guess, doesn't mean a lot, right?
Oh, it has absolutely no significance in this respect. It was just there. I don't remember exactly why,
right.
But it was there in Budapest that the powers that made the decision that you have summarized so well happened to meet in Budapest. It's a lovely city, so why not?
Right. Well, one is really wondering now how much like Putin he is in the terms of the real objections from the EU are that Orban and his party dominated the press, dominated the campaign, had an unfair advantage. All of these things that you can apply to Putin and United Russia. And there's no question that Orban has moved to control the judiciary and to control the central bank. And all of those things is too, very similar to Putin's move. So how much is he a kind of closet authoritarian, shall we say?
Oh, well, I in the article I referred to the system that he has built in the last 4 years as semi-authoritarian. This is really debatable. I did get a couple of emails from some readers saying, why did I put there semi, that it is fully authoritarian. I also got, by the way, emails and actually comments from the Washington Post for not understanding properly how democratic Orban is. So some of these things are debatable, but what is not debatable is the concentration of power moving away from pluralism, both in politics and in the economic system, towards moving away from basically democracy and pluralism and the free market towards centralization. That is happening. How far it has gone, I would say that Putin is a far more authoritarian leader, and the political culture of Russia allows him to be more focused on holding power. But Orban is moving in that direction, and he does have considerable support. Although when you go to Budapest, there the support is minimal. That was the city where the capital city, where the opposition has done quite well.
So are there similarities then with Putin is able to tap into Russia's sense of humiliation, having been a great superpower one day and the next day begging for international aid and losing territory and NATO moving eastward, etc. Putin has clearly been able to tap into that sentiment. He's riding high in the polls on a kind of geopolitical macho that he's exhibiting now over having taken Crimea and now is threatening Ukraine, or the rest of Ukraine. So is there a similarity between Putin's cynical use of a collective sense of humiliation on the part of a lot of Russians and Orban's use of this idea of Europeans looking down at them and being colonial in their attitude?
Oh, yes. There's a lot of similarity. The Hungarian National Day is on March 15th. And I took a look at his speeches on March 15th, which are particularly strong on nationalist rhetoric. Well, understandably, this is like, July 4th, the equivalent of that. And those speeches are full of I would have to say, not only criticism, but great apprehension towards the West, which he describes on the one hand as being in decline. Of course, this has been forecast by philosophers and others for centuries, but he has picked this up. So he's against, he describes a declining West in order to justify his opening to the East. On the other hand, curiously, he takes a lot of money, or his country takes a lot of money in terms of what's called cohesion funds from the European Union. The European Union has this absolutely marvelous and expensive program to even out the infrastructure throughout Europe, meaning the new members in Central and Eastern Europe. And so while he's taking all that money, he is attacking attacking the European Union. He has not attacked the United States directly, but his press certainly has.
So does he use the same analogies of European decline or Western decline which Putin uses in Russia? But Putin is talking about a new kind of morality and conservatism. He's using the Eastern Church, and he's, you know, there's no accident that he moved against homosexuals, etc., in that rather brutal and reactionary way that he has, all of which appeals to this sense of that the West's not only declining, I'm not sure where their evidence is, but certainly declining in terms of its moral and family values.
Well, that's very much in evidence in Hungary as well. Orbán's party, which is called Fidesz, also has a minor party supporting it. That's the Christian Democrats. That's further to the right and particularly strong on the issues that you're talking about, like against gay rights and so on. And so they passed the constitution. Since they had 2/3 majority, Hungary has a new constitution as well as a totally new electoral system. And the constitution does speak out on this, on these issues, where in a very, very conservative way. But yes, I think you're getting to the point of similarities with Russia, and there is no question that Putin is making use of the Orthodox Church, just like Orbán is making use of the Catholic Church, even though some of the Catholic priests are not in his corner. But the higher-ups are. And so this is one reason why a very traditional countryside in Hungary is particularly devoted to him. It's not just supportive, but it is an almost religious devotion to a leader. It seems to me, I'm not clear in my own mind yet how far to go with this point, but you have to ask the question whether democracy, pluralist Western-style democracy, has or has not fallen on fertile soil in Hungary and some of the other countries in the area, because the dissonance that democracy comes with is very troublesome and disturbs a lot of people, and the kind of tolerance that it takes appears to me to be absent. When Orbán last night, for example, said that Hungary is more united than any other country in Europe, you have to wonder, what is he talking about? It is not. It's the most divisive country, where people don't, in any tolerant way, as in pluralist democracies, talk to one another. So there's a lot of problems there. Maybe I'll put it another way. After the collapse of communism, we thought that that democracy was the only alternative for Hungary and Poland and the other countries, and that once we build institutions, domestic institutions of pluralism, and once you have NATO membership and EU membership, things will be okay. What I think we forgot was what's in the people's mind and what's in their hearts and what is the tradition. And there's a long way to go. As I said, tolerance has not fallen on fertile soil there.
Well, not to belabor analogies with this new Hungarian government of Orbán's, who have been just re-elected for another 4 years, even though they got 44.5% of the vote, and the socialists only got 26% of the vote. there is a party to the right of them, and there's also a party, there's a lot of right-wing nationalists to the right of Putin, even though he's flirting now with nationalism. And right-wing nationalism is on the rise across Western Europe as well. We've seen that with Marine Le Pen in France. So just put that in context, the idea that this party, this radical nationalist party, Jobbik, came in with 20% or 20.5% of the vote. Last time around, they only got 17%. They're the party that's going after the gypsies, the Roma. They're a pretty ugly party. But their new leader, young, telegenic guy, has taken a more moderate tone, this leader called Gabor Vono. So put that in the overall context of the rise of the ultra-right in Europe, and what does it mean in Hungary?
Well, I would make 2 points in response to your very good question. The first point is the international aspect. This party is too racist to be accepted even by Le Pen's party and several others, Le Pen's in France and several others elsewhere. And so they are not joining in whatever association is emerging in the European Parliament. They have their own prejudices, of course, in France, but the kind of anti-Roma hatred that characterizes Jobbik and the kind of anti-Semitism that characterizes Jobbik is something that some of the even far-right parties in Europe that just don't want to be bothered with. The second point has to do with the Hungarian politics. However critical one is, and most Westerners are, who know what they're talking about Orbán's party and Orbán's policies, they do stop at the kind of racism, particularly the kind of racism against gypsies, against the Roma, where Jobbik's basic support has to do with the Hungarian public's disgust, large parts disgust with the Roma problem. It's a very real problem, but the racism is disgusting, and occasionally they have engaged in physical violence as well. This is not something that Fidesz has explicitly approved. Now, whether in the campaign or some other places, they have winked at this, and they have not embarked on a sharp criticism of Jobbik's explicit racism is another question. But there is a difference here. And so the second thing is that the economy under Orbán's Hungary has not performed well, particularly for the poor. And many of the supporters of this far-right party, Jobbik, come from the lower middle class, and poor workers, and especially those who live in areas near where the Romas tend to be, which is in eastern Hungary.
Well, Charles Gatti, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
Pleasure was certainly mine. Thank you.
Thank you. Again, I've been speaking with Charles Gatti, who's a senior fellow at the Foreign Policy Institute at Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies. He's a former senior advisor with the policy planning staff of the U.S. Department of State and a former professor at Union College and Columbia University. His books include Failed Illusions, Moscow, Washington, Budapest, and the 1956 Hungarian Revolt, and Zbig, the Strategy and Statecraft of Zbigniew Brzezinski. He has an article at the Washington Post, What Viktor Orbán's Victory Means for Hungary and the West. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. Time was